Peace be with you. Friends, our gospel today raises one of the most difficult and vexing and contested questions that any spiritual person can ask. Let me read to you from the first couple of lines from our gospel today, from the 13th chapter of Luke. Jesus passed through towns and villages, teaching as he went and making his way to Jerusalem. Someone asked him, "Lord, will only a few people be saved?" He answered them, "Strive to enter through the narrow gate." Well, there's the question, posed directly to Jesus, one that I would be willing to bet echoes in your heart from time to time. Lord, will only a few people be saved? You might rephrase it, Lord, who will be saved? Many? Most? Everybody? Will I be saved? It's a question that has vexed and concerned theologians, spiritual writers, ordinary believers up and down the centuries. Think of all the different answers that have been given. St. Augustine, one of the greatest theologians of all time, said, really only a comparative handful will be saved. Most of us, he said, belong to the massa damnata. That means the mass of those who will be damned. Origen of Alexandria, on the other hand, writing about, a century before Augustine, had a very different opinion. He even speculated once that perhaps everyone, at the end of the day, will be saved. Think of Luther and Luther's great agonized wrestling with this problem, especially as it concerned himself. Will I be saved? How do I know that I'm saved? Up and down the centuries, it echoes. And I imagine it echoes in our hearts and minds, too. Who will be saved? Now, here's what I find most interesting about this gospel. Jesus never answers the question. It's a theoretical question. He never answers it. He never says yes or no. He never gives a number. Instead, he tells the man to do something. Listen again. He answered, "Strive to enter through the narrow gate." Now, what's happening here? Why doesn't he give him a straight answer? It's a good question, an honest question. I think he's trying to do something. I think he's trying to block one of the most dangerous tendencies in the spiritual life, which is a kind of fussy preoccupation with how I'm doing. When I spend my spiritual energy looking within, gauging and judging and determining how I'm doing spiritually, chances are I'm not doing well spiritually. You know, if you're trying to learn how to hit a golf ball well, you can read books and you can watch great golfers and listen to your coach and so on and so forth. But if at the moment of hitting the golf ball you are thinking about your swing, you have a lousy swing. The idea is to take in all that data and then just hit the ball. If you're a salesman and you've read all the books on sales, you've listened to great salespeople, you've studied and so on. But if at the moment of making the sale you are fussily obsessed with your technique, you'll be a lousy salesperson. You have to just give yourself to it. So I would suggest in a similar way in the spiritual life. If I am fussily preoccupied with how I'm doing, whether I'm in, whether I'm going to be saved, chances are I'm not getting on with the business of the spiritual life. Second problem with this raising of the question. Christians, we have a terrible tendency not only to look at ourselves and how we're doing, but then as a result to compare ourselves with others. Lord, are there many who will be saved? Can you hear perhaps behind that question this assumption? Well, I'm pretty sure that I'm going to be saved, but now I'll be secretly delighted if you tell me the vast majority of all those others are not going to be saved. I know this is kind of a hard truth, but I think we can all acknowledge it. We love to gossip, for example. You know, where two or three people sit down together, chances are they're going to end up gossiping about, talking about, undermining, attacking somebody else. We take a sort of inordinate pleasure in exalting ourselves at the expense of others. I think this reaches its high point in a religious context. Well, I mean, at least I know I'm saved. I don't know about the rest of them. I'm pretty sure I'm walking the path of the Lord. I'm following the commandments. And I'm pretty sure that all those people out there are not. When we spend, Christians, our spiritual energy looking introspectively within ourselves, wondering whether I'm saved, there's a very good chance that soon I will be asking, I wonder whether he's saved. I wonder whether she's saved. And frankly, I rather doubt it. I wonder if behind this man's question is a deep desire for the Lord to say, by the way, most people are not going to be saved. You know, one of my heroes, as you know, theologically, is St. Thomas Aquinas. One of his rare lapses, he must have been having a bad day, one of his rare lapses was when Thomas Aquinas said, one of the joys of heaven will be to watch the sufferings of the damned. Well, I just think that couldn't be further from the truth. That's what sinners would love to do. Sinners would love to exult in the sufferings of others. But not those in heaven, not those who are saved. It would just be at odds with the life of heaven. I think this passage, when Jesus gets the man off of himself and off of his preoccupied question, he's trying to avoid just this sort of thing. Now, what is this particular thing that Jesus tells the man to do? Strive to enter by the narrow gate. Why a gate, and why is it narrow? We know in John's Gospel, there are a whole series of I am statements that Jesus makes. I am the bread of life. I am the vine. I am the good shepherd. I am the way, truth, and life. One that's not as well known, I am the gate. Do you remember? He talks about the sheepfold. The sheepfold means the kingdom of heaven. It means God's communal. Jesus says, I'm the gate, meaning I'm the way in. No one gets in except through me. Strive to enter by the narrow gate. What he's saying is, strive to enter into the life of salvation by conformity with me. Why is the gate narrow? Because it is shaped just like Christ. The gate is in the shape of Christ. It means when you conform yourself to me, you think as I think. You see as I see. You will as I will. You act as I act. Then you are conformed to the life, which is salvation. You know, if you take one thing away from this talk today, please take this. Heaven is not a reward for having performed well at a kind of arbitrary game. I think too many of us think that way about heaven, as though God sets up some arbitrary rules in this life. And now, if you follow these things, just because I've said so, you jump through the right hoops and so on, you will get the reward at the end of the day. Well, that isn't it. What heaven means, what salvation means, is living in accord with Christ Jesus, becoming a person of love, nonviolence, compassion, forgiveness. You know what comes to my mind with this idea of the gate? When you go to the airport and you have your carry-on luggage, it's got to fit into that little container to make sure it gets on the plane, remember? Think of the gate now as what we have to fit into if we are to be fit to live in the kingdom of heaven. Thinking, acting, seeing, being like Christ. The whole sacramental life, the whole liturgical life, the reason we listen to homilies and all of that is an attempt to conform ourselves. Jesus says, that's what you ought to be worried about. Not looking within so much, not comparing yourself to others, but getting your life conformed to Christ Jesus. Let's make it a little more specific. what this means to be in the form of Christ. And I want now to look at the first reading briefly, which is just terrific, from the very end of the book of the prophet Isaiah. Here's the Lord speaking. I will set a sign among them. From them I will send fugitives to the nations, to Tarshish, Tubal, and Javan, to the distant coastlands, that have never heard of my fame or seen my glory, and they shall proclaim my glory among the nations. Here's the Lord now addressing Israel, his chosen people, the ones to whom he has specially and specifically revealed himself. What's their mission? Why has he done this? Not that they might rest complacently in this privilege, but rather, as he says, from you I will send out fugitives to the nations, emissaries, missionaries, who will preach and proclaim to all the world. I chose Israel, not that Israel might exult in itself, rejoice in its privileges. I chose Israel that it might be a missionary to the nations. Listen, that it might be a conduit of the divine grace for the whole world. When does Israel go bad? And you can watch this up and down the Old Testament. Israel goes bad in the measure that it clings to itself and thereby dams up or blocks up the flow of the divine grace. When Israel is a conduit to the nations, then it realizes its own identity. Okay. Israel here is an image of Christ and the Christ life, the life of salvation. I go off the beam when I look inward. I verify my salvation. I cling to my privileges. I'm saved. And, what's often the extension, and you're not. That's when I dam up the grace of God in me. Jesus says, stop worrying about that. Stop asking that question. Rather, strive to enter by the narrow gate. Strive to conform yourselves to me. Who is he? The one through whom the divine grace flowed. And so when we become like Christ, conduits of the divine love, presence, grace, then we are conformed to Christ. Then we are living the salvation life. The problem is a fussy preoccupation with the self. The answer is forgetting yourself in love, which makes you conformed to Christ. Let me close with this. If you find yourself like this man in the gospel, worried about this question, am I going to be saved? Are there many who are saved? Who gets in? Who's out? When you find yourself preoccupied with that question, forget about it and perform a simple act of love. Let the divine grace flow through you. Write a letter to someone who's lonely. Visit somebody who's sick or imprisoned. Care for someone that needs your care. Lord, who'll be saved? Perform an act of love, and you'll find your answer. God bless.